This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/GOT for your free audiobook download. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And we are talking about Season 5, Episode 1, titled The War is to Come. Game of Thrones is back.
Yeah, it is, baby.
Just as good as ever. I would say better than ever, but it's always been so good that it's hard to say.
I thought it was a great first episode, honestly. Yeah. It was exciting to see. I think we got a little bit more answers to how they're going to reconcile how much material they're covering in the books versus the shows, and from a book reader perspective, and I think from a just a pure show watcher experience, I was a little bit worried that they'd be dishing out too much information, stuff that came from a long time ago, but it doesn't seem like you were lost at all, so...
No.
And you're dumb as hell.
Yeah, I'm real dumb, and I don't pay attention when I'm watching either, so it's a double whammy. No, I feel like it was all fairly straightforward, and it all is leading to these wars to come.
And
I mean,
stuff,
it does a good job living up to its name.
And there's some stuff that's like you're not supposed to understand. And increasingly there's stuff that you're getting into the points where even like there's a lot of debate about book readers because we have no evidence either way on some of this stuff.
Gotcha. So, and there's probably stuff that is being set up that we have yet to even realize is being set up.
Sure.
I mean, that stuff with what's his name, who comes back, who was the servant of Robert Baratheon.
Lancel.
Yeah, Lancel, when he comes back and
says, what a stupid name.
It was all, you know, it was all basically a plot, and here I'm going to reveal it in these lines 4 seasons later. It's like, oh, okay, sure. So a lot of this stuff we might not even have an inkling is important will be later on.
Indeed.
And I really like that. That's cool. Do we even need to ask who made this? I personally know because I was watching the episode and I recognize the name.
Yeah, it was directed by Michael Slovis, who achieved fame as a cinematographer on many, many episodes of Breaking Bad. Actually ended up directing 5 of them. He's directing the first 2 episodes of Game of Thrones this year as a unit.
Okay.
And it was written by the Double Ds themselves, David Benioff and Daniel Weiss. Alan Zeppenwald noted that there was a couple of winks to like the Breaking Bad style storytelling, like the airhole cam or shithole cam.
No, okay. Yeah.
As they might be for Tyrion. So some of that look and feel, but I mean, this is a traditionally great looking episode of Game of Thrones. Although it's improbable, but this show keeps looking better. If you watch season 1 and even season 2, it's not that ever looked bad, but you compare the sets and just how the props and some of the dress and just the cinematography, and then you look at like season 4, season 5, it's head and shoulders above. So they keep on, as they get bigger and bigger budget, more and more popular, they're actually, you know, I know this is controversial along some networks, they're actually plowing that money back into the show, it seems.
You know, I think HBO is pretty good at that.
Yeah.
HBO has a standard of excellence that is helped by a big budget.
Sure.
It's helped by kind of some of the more business-minded tactics that they have.
We've talked about their kind of weird economy, that they don't really chase ratings necessarily. It's more about making their subscribers feel like you're buying a premium product. And part of that is delivering a premium product.
Yeah. And they do. It seems almost across the board. I can't think of an HBO show that I would say is bad.
Yeah, just objectively bad.
Yeah.
They're also being handsomely rewarded because 8 million people officially watched this.
Jeez. Okay.
Which is about 2 million over the season 4 premiere and about 1 million over the height of last season. So
not bad.
Steady growth for a premium cable product. And this was after... before the episode's release over the weekend, the first 4 episodes were leaked in their entirety to the internet. Someone got a hold of some screener copies and have spread them thither and yon.
Also, probably not hurt by the launch of HBO Now.
That's certainly...
Which is how I watch the thing.
Certainly, yeah.
Because I don't have cable anymore.
Sure.
So I'm watching my HBO stuff on that.
Towards the end of the spoiler section, we'll or not spoiler section, sorry, the feedback section, we'll be talking about, the ethical and show watcher dilemmas presented by the episodes being leaked. So
okay.
I put it at the tail end because I'm not sure if everyone will find it interesting, but enough people asked us what our opinion was. So I figured I'd throw it in there. And before we get into the episode, I just want to thanks again to Highway Superstar for loaning us their intro music.
We have to give it back when we're done.
We do. We do. Yeah. All the bits. All the bits.
I mean, really, they've got kiosks that we just go put the song back in.
Can we have one unit of song, please?
Yeah.
It's checked out library card style. But yeah, you can go and see our show notes for a link to his SoundCloud page and also a link to the tunes. You can download for free. It's pretty awesome.
Yep.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make. Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time. Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers. Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live. Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Good stuff. All right, let's get into the recap. We start off with young Cersei and her friend wandering through the woods. Actually, more traveling through the woods. They seem to be on a mission to find this witch who then tells her future and says, you're going to be queen for a time, but then someone younger and more beautiful will take your place. She seems bothered by that. Even the young Cersei seems bothered by that.
It's very Maleficent. This is very, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall kind of stuff. So,
sure.
Yeah, she seems bothered by that. I think that's an understatement. Well, saying that you're going to be cast down by someone younger and more beautiful, which I think this age Cersei can hardly imagine.
Sure.
But you can imagine the Cersei that we see in the show now. I feel like she's aware of the fact that the bloom is starting to wither just a bit.
Yeah, you take a look at Margaery and you take a look at Cersei, and she's got to be thinking, uh-oh,
yeah,
look what she's doing with the king. The prophecies are coming true.
And as she's winding my son around her finger, what's going to happen in 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years?
Exactly.
And also, this, you know, it's not just her own personal downfall. She is prophesying the deaths of all of her legitimate children, which is got to be a huge blow. And also the fact that, you know, we're getting this. I like the fact that they're debuting this right now, because this prophecy we see, because we've watched the show, we've seen how much of it's come true. And it kind of serves why Cersei is so kind of bitter and paranoid, and why she might be ill-suited to handle a threat from Margaery.
Well, she's kind of a little shit in this episode too. She's talking about gouging out her eyes if Certainly. She doesn't tell her future. And yeah, like,
no, Cersei's still Cersei, but yeah. You take that base layer of kind of like bitchitude, and then you put on a whole elaborate death promise. It's like, so whenever you feel like you're happiest in your life, it also gives some poignancy to Tyrion's threat to her. and why she took it so serious.
About, ashes in her mouth.
Exactly. Like, you can see all this feeding into her already huge paranoia complex. So
sure,
that'll be entertaining.
Gotta
to
hate Tyrion even more for being right.
Right. I also thought it was a funny nod to the book readers because they lampshaded the witch's appearance. Here, the witch was, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean level attractive, you know, like, she's a pirate wench attractive. Mm-hmm. In the book, she's hideous. She's like a hideous troll monster.
The three eyes and fangs.
Not the three eyes so much, but definitely the sharp teeth and the scales and the warts and all that crap. So I felt like that was a nice little wink to us book readers.
Sure. Then we see present day Cersei showing up at her father's body. I don't even know what to call this ceremony, but it's some kind of showing or funeral or wake or something.
Westerosi wakes.
Some medieval death ritual. Jaime is already there, and they argue kind of about who's to blame for all this. And Cersei's pissed at Tyrion, as she always is. And, of course, by extension, that means Jaime, because he's the one who helped Tyrion out.
Sure.
So, I don't know. She probably has a lot of reason, good reason to be pissed here. I don't think Cersei is all just piss and vinegar for no reason.
Also, like, you know, last season kind of charted the downfall of Jaime and Cersei's relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Where would you say it's now? Like, what is... because she's really bitter about, you know, Jaime... obviously, Cersei had a lot of complicated feelings about her father. Wasn't too hip on being forced to marry Loras. But she kind of felt like her kids and her dynasty, as he would say, was secure. Tywin dead there, like Jaime says. Like, it's all the sharp knives are be coming out. And she is refusing, it seems like, the aid of like one of her most loyal allies.
Yeah, I don't know. She has a lot of reasons to be angry at Jaime.
Certainly.
The least of which is just her being mad constantly and angry at everyone.
and drunk. Don't forget
drunk. And drunk. Super drunk all the time. There's nothing good about that relationship at this point. I mean, it feels like they're keeping it up because they kind of have to. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a brother and sister bond. They're more than that, obviously. There's something there keeping them together, but they're very angry at each other, or at least Cersei's angry at him.
It seems like Jaime was ready to circle the wagons.
Yeah, he it doesn't seem to go both ways here.
Yeah,
with this anger,
which you wonder, you know, where what place is there in King's Landing for Jaime at this point?
I don't know. Maybe he can be Hand of the King or still in the Kingsguard. I don't know.
He doesn't even have his hand. How can he be Hand of the King?
He has a hand. Can I just say the eye stones are never not creepy?
They're not.
Like, they start out with that shot of Tywin on the table, and God. I can't take it, man. All right, moving on. We get to Tyrion, who's traveling through a city in a box and is looking out, trying to see what he can see. He's let out of the box, and he's very depressed. He looks like he's malnourished and dehydrated, and he immediately goes over the wine and starts drinking.
Sure.
Which is so Tyrion, and I'm really glad they had him do that.
Sure.
But he's super depressed about his current predicament and his kind of loss of nobility or lordship here.
Well, I mean,
he hasn't technically lost it, but there's no way it's honored now.
Well, and just his personal sense of self-worth, that you can tell that, you know, making his father proud or getting his father's love is something that's been important to him. And in one fell swoop, he lost forever. Well, he murdered the woman that he loved.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered his father for saying that he's no son of his. And then he had to flee the country in a fucking crate.
Yep.
Where he stuffed food in through one hole and shit out the other. It's essentially a modular human centipede thing that they were going for. You could just, it's a highly evolved model from the original.
Sure.
And the other thing I liked about the scene is it works as comic relief, because Tyrion and Varys kind of bitching at each other is never not good.
Yeah, definitely. So I had guessed that he was going across the Narrow Sea, and it turns out he did. And we know from later in this episode that he's going to meet up with Daenerys.
Did you understand where we're at?
I don't really know where we're at. I know where we're going, though.
So Pintos really is where we first met Dany and Viserys.
That's where we are, Pintos.
They were being sheltered in this guy's Illyrio Monpathmos. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. And those are the two guys, Illyrio and Illyrio and Varys were the guys walking through the dungeons of King's Landing talking about, you know, this scheme to put the Targaryens back that Arya overheard hiding behind the dragon skulls way back in season one.
Yeah.
So if you know, I don't think it's crucial to the plot because he essentially says all this again. Mm-hmm. But if you did make those connections, it was a big kind of, you know, aha moment.
Yeah. So these guys didn't like Robert Baratheon. They were trying to, they formed some kind of restoration group for the Targaryen name.
I thought it was interesting that they said it was a whole group of people. It implies this much larger, wider conspiracy.
Yeah.
Which you start to wonder, like, you know, how far does that go? It's in Westeros, obviously. It's in Essos.
Yeah, if we didn't have the scene with Loras, you said his name is?
Yes.
Or, wait, not... Not Marjorie's brother.
Okay.
The sparrow guy.
Oh, Lancel.
Lancel. If we didn't have that scene, I would almost say like maybe they're responsible for the death of Robert Baratheon, but it doesn't seem like it is. It seems like Cersei is.
That's the interesting thing, because there's conspiracies within conspiracies.
Like, they would have, but they just didn't get to it in time.
Sure. And ultimately, I don't know if... Do you think Littlefinger had a hand in that too? Or was he just more... removing John Arryn and destabilizing, you know, removing his Robert's base of power and kind of all of his reasonable advisors, because that's the uber conspiracy. Seems like that, you know,
that seems how Littlefinger works. I don't know. It's hard to tell where these lines,
because the
cross,
you know, the Lannisters
other.
Had this big conspiracy as well. So you've got like these three main conspiracies: the Tywin Lannister one, the Littlefinger one, and the Varys one, and they're all competing who will be on top.
Yeah. Who did what? I don't know. I'm sure they'll reveal more about that as we go. The people of Meereen pull down the Harpy statue from the top of the pyramid in a effects-filled shot here.
I love the close-up on the Harpy's face that
at the end,
paid off really beautifully with the sons, the reveal of the Sons of the Harpy.
Yeah.
Really, really awesome CG.
Sure. Yeah, I can't imagine the damage that was done. So it looked like they built some wooden scaffolding down the side of that
to try
keep
to protect
it from
it?
From totally just destroying the side of the pyramid.
Right.
But it didn't seem to cover the whole side, and so I'm sure there are gouges.
And you wonder also, I thought it was a more interesting question. I don't think you seem too interested in exploring it, but the mistakes you make as a conqueror.
Okay.
You know, I think there's a lot of parallels between foreign wars and invasions and allusions to throughout this episode, but you know, when you come in and you overthrow the ruling class and you uproot all of the culture down to the religious, you know, figures and all that, it seems like you're asking for rebellion and trouble. And I think this is another,
there's going to be turmoil for sure.
Right. You know, another problem with Daenerys is like, you know, she's a queen, I'm not a politician. Well, that's not even true in the strictest definition of the word of queen. I mean,
sure.
You can't just conquer and maintain power, especially since, as we later find out in the episodes, she doesn't. Her big claim to fame was her dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Always has been, probably always will be, and she doesn't even have control over those.
Doesn't seem like it. No. One of the Unsullied goes to a whore to be pet like a cat,
mm-hmm.
and in the process, he gets his throat slit by a masked person.
Did you find that shocking?
Surprising, not shocking.
Mm.
I wasn't disgusted or outraged or anything.
Sure.
But I didn't expect him to have his throat slit, no.
Hmm. I thought it was a really... I mean, that's kind of... you know, that happens more or less exactly as it does in the book. It's not shown, it's just referenced.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It's... I think it's a great way to explicitly show kind of what's hinted at the book. You know, these Unsullied and... I wonder how this or does it shed light on the Grey Worm Missandei relationship that seems to be forming.
It certainly could, although he would deny it, I think.
I don't know. I mean, so this guy, it seemed like he he was reliving experiences as a little boy, because the backstory of the Unsullied are they're just abducted as boys and they're put through this brutal physical transformation and then denied personhood for their whole lives and essentially sold as a slave army. So I could see a guy paying to be just like comforted and sung to, because that's something he's never experienced. Or if they do, they're very dim memory. And so then is Grey Worm trying to, because I feel, I always felt like a brother sister energy to this more than, although him creeping out over her being nude is weird. I wonder if he's trying to relive some kind of brother sister experience that we're going to find out.
That would be extra weird with him perving on the nude Miss Sandy.
Yeah. And this is all like heavily, this is all, I mean, the Grey Worm Miss Sandy stuff doesn't happen in the books, and there's nothing that's really a direct counterpart to that. I thought they were just going to illuminate this scene and that you're going to get that, you know, the whole idea, the add depth to these Unsullied and make them more three-dimensional people. They're going to do that with Grey Worm and Miss Sandy for greater effect, although then you'd have to kill Grey Worm. But I don't know that that's, I don't know that you couldn't get away with killing him at this point.
Sure. Yeah, I don't see why not. You've gotten away with killing more important people.
Nah, he's just commander of the Unsullied. I'm sure there's a ton of Unsullied just under him that would be just as good.
Sure. That maybe we can have an Unsullied Joffrey.
No.
Speaking of the song, I assume this is some, you know, Across the Narrow Sea song, because it's not Reigns of Castamere and it's not The Bear and the Maiden Fair.
It's the Essos remix of The Bear and the Maiden Fair.
Okay.
It's a lot more of a bittersweet love story in Essos.
All right. Sounds
good. In the Giscari slave empire, they put a different twist on it.
So I guess that this masked person left the mask on the dead Unsullied.
That's what we're told anyway.
And they bring it to Daenerys and say, here, there's some bad shit happening. They talk about, you know, the sons of the Harpy. And she basically says, hey, bring these people to me. She also says, we're gonna bury this guy in a temple and give him an honorable burial and in public. So everyone sees it. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's worried. Barrison or whatever his name is worried that it's going to cause these sons of the Harpy to lash out.
Yeah, if you recall last year, Hisdar Zolarak came to Dany to plead to take his father off of the crucifixion and bury him at this Temple of the Graces. And if you read between the lines, or if you're a book reader or steeped in the lore, you'll know that temple is where kind of the upper class are interred and can be buried.
Yeah, so I guessed, but
it would be another kind of insult to the ruling class to bury a common slave, a freed slave, but in their eyes, a common slave. Like the one kid said, they don't see us as people. Mm-hmm. So it would be a further affront to their senses, as well as pulling down the Golden Harpy and all this other stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I'm wondering how much Hisdar is going to acknowledge, oh, she let my father have a proper burial, why not give this person a proper burial? Or if he is still very, very much stuck in that mindset of these people aren't worthy.
It seems that he's a pretty reasonable or liberal of the upper class. He's also very young, which kind of goes hand in hand with, if he was 40 years old, then he might have been like, you know, fuck all the slaves and who cares, or he might be a son of a harpy himself.
Sure.
He still might be a son of Harpy. Who knows?
He could be. Yeah. Anyway, then we go to Miss Sandy, who talks to Grey Worm as they're preparing for, I don't know, to go find the Sons of the Harpy, I guess.
I thought, yeah.
They're mounting up.
Yeah, and I love the set here. I like the whole, you know, just seeing this side of the Unsullied, that they're just this heavily militaristic order, and they're taking their preparations and taking care of their armor seriously. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it gives a small sense of the scale of, because I was just thinking, like, man, what it takes to feed this army and keep them equipped and keep them sharp and on edge. It's impressive.
Definitely. So she asks why the Unsullied would go to a brothel, and he says that he has no idea. Do you buy that he has no idea?
Yeah, no, I don't. Because if many of the Unsullied are doing this, he's got to have some idea. And also, just the way he looks at Miss Sandy, it seems like he's got something going on there. I don't know what.
Maybe still some stones, no pillar. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, so did you, were you kind of excited to see?
I was, yeah. I was like, oh, he's going to take his pants off. What's going to happen?
What kind of freaky CG slash prosthetics are we going to see? Is it just going to be like a Ken doll down there? What's the deal? And they neatly dodged that issue.
HBO seems to have a problem showing dongs, right? Right? I mean, they'll show full frontal on a woman. They will definitely not show full frontal on a man.
What? Sometimes they do. Like,
not in this show.
You can get, you can show Hodor's dong all you want.
Oh, that's right.
But it's like,
that's right. They did show Hodor's dong.
But that was,
I don't know why they're so shy about it, especially in the Loras lover scene.
The actor plays Hodor claimed that was a prosthetic, number one, and it was played for comedic effect. So it's like, you can only show, that seems like, you know, you go back to,
you can only laugh at dicks.
Walk Hard, the Dewey, whatever story. It's like, you can only show a dick on screen if it's funny. I don't really get that. I'm not advocating for more dick because, like, you know, sure. I've seen one every day of my life. It's not that great. But it just seems,
it's a gonna weird have, double standard.
If you're going to have tits and minge flapping everywhere,
you should throw a
dong in there.
I'm with you.
Every once in a while. Make the ladies happy.
You know who else would like that? Jon Snow, I think. Jon Snow would like more dong in the Game of Thrones universe.
Would he?
I don't know. But he would definitely like to teach this arrow kid how to fight. I don't know this kid's name. What is this kid's name?
I have no idea. He's the villager that was the sole survivor of the Thin massacre from last year.
Sure. He's leg plant, arrow nod kid.
Do you think, because the way I read this scene is Jon Snow getting wrapped up in kind of irrational anger at this kid for killing.
Okay, I could see that.
His girl.
Yeah, he seemed a little bummed by that.
He kind of got the better of it halfway through and realized, like, oh, this is a kid. He didn't know he was doing his job. And then he went in all, like, you know, big brother tassel hair mode. Or was I just inventing?
I mean, I don't know that he went into tassel hair mode, but he did, you know, he told him he was going to ring his bell.
That was at the end when he
let
was
his head down, but
in friendly mode. I just thought that he was going pretty hard at the kid at first.
Okay. Yeah. I thought through most of that scene he was.
All right.
But then Alistair walks through. He's glaring at everyone, including Gilly, who, you know, he despises. He doesn't like the wildlings at all.
No.
And for, I think, fair reason. They just attacked him not too long ago.
He doesn't like Sam.
That's true. He doesn't really like anybody.
He doesn't. Yeah, I mean, to him, this brotherhood is just a pack of thieves and murderers and rapists, and which largely true. But
you got me there, Alistair.
But he thinks he doesn't respect them. He thinks they're something that need to be a firm hand.
Yeah, yeah. So Sam is talking to Gilly. He says, you know, he's not going to let them send her away. He's going to go with her. And then she reminds him, oh, but they'll kill you. And he's like, didn't think about that. You might be right.
Sure. And they also mentioned
he's at the rock in a hard place level.
Right. Here. And they did a lot of clever establishing of the Castle Black politics, that there is going to be a Lord Commander election. And obviously Alistair is at the top of that list. But the commander of the Shadow Tower, which is one of the towers, I believe, on the extreme west side of the wall. There's basically three castles. There's the Castle Black in the middle, and then there's the East Watch by the Bay, and then there's the Shadow Tower, and I can't remember which is the East Coast and which is the West Coast one. But he's the Lord Commander of that tower, and he's thrown his hat in the ring as well.
Okay.
Obviously, it seems like things will go badly for Sam and Gilly if Alistair takes command.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'd like to see Jon Snow take command, but I don't think he's going to.
I like Sam's note that he's probably the only black brother in history that's killed both a Thin and a White Walker. So he's a little full of himself. But he's also got a point.
He doesn't sound like he's full of himself necessarily.
No.
He sounds like he's playing it up.
He's trying to
making a joke almost. Yeah. Like, I'm a great warrior.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't think he believes it.
It's all natural talent. It's on loan from God. He's just worried if he doesn't want to overtrain. He doesn't want to train that natural instincts out.
I can't blame him. Melisandre comes to Jon and says the king wants to see him. And on the way up the wall, things get creepy, as they tend to do with Melisandre.
Sure.
She asks Jon if he's a virgin. He says no, and she says good.
Which, that question has to be some form of Castle Black HIPAA violation, right?
Easily,
you can't ask the sexual history of the Black brothers. There's no way.
You know, I think the person enforcing those policies died a long time ago. Got it. Probably
some
an
giant
arrow
bashed
the heart.
His head in last. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
was the guy who got shot off the wall by the giant's arrow.
The HR order of the Black Brothers just was decimated. Decimated.
Yep. Anyway, this can't go anywhere good. I don't know why she's asking this, and we're not supposed to. I don't think as book reader or non book readers. I just know it can't go anywhere good. I mean, she's been looking for noble blood the entire time.
Noble blood, and I tried to do some searching about if there was some special potent power to virgin blood as well. So like,
okay. But she seems not to want virgin blood. She wants the non-virgin blood of Jon Snow.
Well, it depends on how you take that, because if she says good because, you know, non-virgin blood is extra good, then that's bad for John. If she's kind of observing Riley good, well, then I'm not going to be tempted to kill you. Like, I felt like that you could take it that way as well. Like, I kind of like you, Jon Snow. I'm glad you're not a virgin, so your extra tasty virgin blood is going to be useless for my sacrifice.
Interesting.
I don't know. And okay. Then she also, the way she uses the king's blood is different. Like, she pokes Stannis and makes a shadow baby. Pokes Gendry and ends up killing like 3 out of 4 kings she targets.
Mm-hmm.
So that seemed like more effective than the shadow baby, however that worked out. But then again, that might have been charlatanism.
Also, the other thing in this scene is she doesn't get cold.
Mm.
Ever, I guess. You know, the fire of some demon or something is burning inside of her. As she says,
there's always,
I don't know what this means,
man. I'm always
on the edge. It could mean literally anything.
I'm always on the edge of trying to figure out exactly where the real magic ends and the bullshit and chicanery begins.
Sure.
You know, so like, you know, yeah, she was super impressed with the priest being able to bring back Beric Dondarrion from life last year.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed shocked at that display. I don't know what he would see, what he would think if some skeletal ghoul crawled out of her vagina. It's interesting that like they're kind of, everyone's re-exploring their powers. So I tend to think that this is not her bullshitting, because she is wearing a very thin silk red dress and it seemed like you'd freeze your ass off at the wall.
Yeah, I would think so.
And she's not, but I don't, that's kind of an interesting superpower. Like,
speaking of ghouls,
as far as handing out superpowers, that's like one you get, that's a last pick, right?
Yeah. I mean,
never being cold.
She's kind of the mirror image of Daenerys, I guess, right?
Sure. I have that superpower. I'm fat and hairy, you know, it's done.
That's
done.
Superpower.
Right. Yeah. It's not exactly a prize.
Well, you're framing it positively. I like that. the other thing, speaking of ghouls, that we haven't seen anything of is the mountain.
Mm.
What is going on with the mountain? Because last I remember, they were trying to pump him full of demon's blood or some shit.
Yeah.
And bring him back from his probably fatal wounds.
Yeah.
From this poison, I guess, that was
on... Yeah, Qyburn, the disgraced meister, was doing some work on him.
So he might be a ghoul next time we see him.
That's very mildly interesting.
I hope they get back to him, because that would be awesome. On the top of the wall... Stannis tells Jon that he wants Mance to join his cause.
Spectacular shot, by the way.
Yeah, up the wall, and yeah, then all of it is outstanding.
You can that's what I'm saying. Like, you compare that to season 2 or maybe season 3, where Jon and the wildling girl,
Ygritte,
made it to the top of the wall, and how kind of weird fakey that looked.
Mm-hmm.
And then you compare that with this, it's just. Again, really, really a mastery of CGI and compositing they've got going on here.
Oh, yeah. He wants Mance to join him, and he's willing to give him land in the north if they help him take it back from Roose Bolton. And Jon says it's not likely, and he's right by the end of this, but he has until nightfall to convince him.
How can you not like Stannis when he says things like, I shall mount Roose Bolton's head on a spike?
I like him more already.
I mean, he dispenses rough justice, but when the target of the rough justice is worthy, I really enjoy Stannis' character, and I like everything that they're doing with him and Jon thus far.
I would like Stannis if he wasn't making decisions that Melisandre wants him to make, if he wasn't being led around by her. I instinctively don't like her because I don't know her rules, for one. what the fuck can she or can't she do?
She got the stench of magic on her.
She does. That fantasy bullshit does not fly with me. So, like, dragons are one thing. Dragons I can get. Like, they shoot fire and they fly. Boom. That's a dragon.
Okay.
Melisandre, I don't even know. I don't even know where to start. And so I don't like her because of that. And by extension, I don't like Stannis because he is being manipulated by the magic. And I understand it's not his fault, but it instinctively makes me not like him either.
And he also has got a pragmatic view of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's kind of deeply skeptical about this one true god. But on the other hand, shadow babies, burning leeches.
Sure, there's something to it.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more forgivable for my looking at things. What did you make of the debates of his relative popularity amongst the Brotherhood?
Whose relative popularity?
They talk about how Jon is much loved by many of the brothers, but he's also not loved by many others. And Jon seems to kind of take all this in stride.
Yeah, this is just feeding my theory or my hope that Jon will take over the Brotherhood.
Right on.
Take over as leader.
What did you think of the deal that Stannis offered the Free Folk? I thought it was...
It's a good deal.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they want.
Yeah.
Well...
Like, even if he gets them a whole...
It might be what they want. It's definitely not what Mance wants.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. But just on the surface,
we will.
Even if he gives them some shithole tracts of land in the north.
Some swampy bullshit.
That's still so much better than where they're coming from. And also, it has a virtue of being on the other side of a 700-foot high wall against the White Walkers.
Yeah.
And the forces of winter in general. So, I think it did a good job of making his offer really good and making some genuine drama between Mance and Jon Snow at the end. Because I see this from all sides, and it's hard to say who's right and who's wrong.
Definitely. When he made that offer, it had me thinking, okay, this is exactly what Mance has said he wants for his people and what they want and the reason they're fighting. That seems like a really good carrot.
Sure. And yeah, like I said, I want to talk about that a lot when we get to that scene.
Okay. Let's go to Robin first. He's getting his ass kicked in
More comedy outlet.
Yep. The show does a lot of that, and I appreciate it.
Ah, the sweet Robin. His training, which involves getting beat up by a larger boy at the wooden sword.
Yeah, and Littlefinger looks at all this, and he says, yeah, I have great confidence in his abilities. They'll grow.
I got to say, I respect the Robin just a little bit more. Because
even doing this,
I imagine we'd see him just on the ground sucking his thumb, crying.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gamely keeping his sword and his shield up. I mean, he's a less capable version of the little villager kid that Jon was beating the hell out of. But still, throughout the whole scene where you hear him just grunting and shrieking, it's good. It's very good.
It's really good.
And Sansa's watching that, and Littlefinger just. It's great.
Oh, they're both smiling on the inside for sure.
I think they're kind of smiling on the outside
a little, but not too much. You don't want to give too much.
Yeah,
away.
It's not ladylike, sure.
Yeah, and it's not very Littlefinger like either. Question for you. Well, no. Okay, it's not really a question.
Well, I'll be sure to have not really an answer.
So, how far? It doesn't seem to me like Robin has any power to say, I'm not going to do this. You're going out the moon door anymore. Littlefinger has taken over.
He's the like Lord Protector.
He's what Catelyn's sister was.
Or he's essentially in the same position on a smaller scale that Cersei is. She's the queen regent.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she has no real power. But she has the power until her son comes of age. It's the same thing. He's like the Lord Protector of the Vale, so he has the power, but, you know, this goes back to Varys' meditation on what is power.
Sure.
So, all these people have the power that they're more... The actual guys with army and arms gives them to him, and it seems like that Peter's gambit with Sansa is continuing to pay off with the more important Lords of the Vale. So they're going along with his whatever his scheme is.
It does. They are.
I don't think they're even aware of what his scheme is. Hell, I'm not aware of what his scheme is.
You might be. You might be lying, you nasty book reader. I certainly am not aware of what his scheme is. But I just wonder, can Robin, if he chooses, say, no, I'm not doing this?
No. Once Sansa and Peter get in that wagon, you're already in, book six territory.
Okay.
No, so I have no fucking clue.
That's right. You said this one was pretty far along.
Yeah.
This plot.
I have no clue where they're going, where they think that Cersei, they can be beyond Cersei's reach, any of that stuff.
I think maybe who, across the narrow sea.
Who do you think, this message that Peter gets, while he's watching Sweet Robin get the hell beat out of him with Lord Royce, do you have any theories about who that is or what it's from or what it's about?
Not who it is. I assume it's your carriage awaits sort of deal.
Oh, something more like mundane
just saying,
like that?
Yeah, just saying, hey, we're ready to go.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I
either
feel
that
like
or it could be word back from someone he contacted who was going
about
to put them
safe
up.
Harbor.
Yeah,
and obviously he lied about, which was can't, you know, that's cutting of him. That he's going back to the Fingers, which is a little shithole holdings in the Vale.
Yeah,
and he's going the opposite direction, so that's cool. But I have no idea. I mean,
yeah, I wonder when word catches up to him.
We have some feedback speculation that seems legit, and I don't really have any fear. I'm a little bit afraid with the four episodes out. That's been made the mailbag a lot trickier. There's a couple things that I kind of erred on the side of not reading because I already have enough problem with book readers pretending not to be book readers to score sweet internet prediction points, right? Ugh. Like with the purple wedding and the red, all that stuff. It's like, you know, now that I've got three episodes that I haven't seen that are floating around here, it's like, this looks a little too on the nose, not going to read it.
Sure, but it's hard for you to tell because you haven't seen them.
I know, but I tell. So, like, it is hell.
All right, moving on.
There's three more episodes released. It'd be seven hells, but it's only four. So
we go to Brienne, who is lamenting the failure of her mission and the loss of all the good lords, and she tells Podrick that he should leave.
Yeah.
That's roughly the whole scene. I mean,
that is.
You know, Podrick protests and I don't know that he actually leaves in the end. I don't think he's going to. Podrick is too loyal for that, even if she doesn't want him there. She didn't want him there to begin with.
Yep.
So why would he leave now?
I don't know.
Unless she like really just threatens to cut his head off or something. Right. But that's not in Brienne's character.
No, and I'm engaged in here, too, because we're getting towards the end. And not only are we getting kind of towards the end of Brienne's story in the books, but also they're remixing, it seems like, what little there is. So I have no idea what she's going to do. I mean, the clear choice is to continue to pursue Sansa, which I thought, to me, we talked about this in Instant Cast, where to me, it was still on the cute side of being too cute. Mm-hmm. The near miss with Littlefinger. But I don't know. I don't know.
If they didn't have to go inside this carriage, they wouldn't even have cut this shot, I don't think.
Right.
Just been one continuous thing.
I always assumed as a book reader that they were somehow going to bring Jaime and Brienne in each other's sphere of influence again.
That'd
because
be cool.
He's the one that gave her a mission and a sword and armor and all that.
And they're kind of in love at this point, right?
I've always thought so. I mean,
there's the thing at Joffrey's wedding where, I don't know, he's looking at her and I think it was Joffrey's wedding.
That's always, you know, that's something I've always kind of shipped myself, that I've always liked them together as a couple, and they're like an odd couple, sure, but it seems like it's right, but...
Like, she might make an honest man out of him.
Yeah.
Maybe. Just maybe.
But I don't know where Jamie, I don't know what Jamie's going to be up to, and I don't know where she's going to be up to, so I don't know.
Yeah. It's all up in the air.
It is.
The other suggestion here is from Podrick himself. He says, hey, Castle Black isn't too far away. Is he suggesting that she go up there because she has nowhere else to go? She's kind of on the run herself now at this point, isn't she?
What would they do with her? Like a black sister?
I don't know.
Are you thinking that or maybe to go interview Jon Snow?
No. I was thinking joining the Night's Watch.
Oh, because I thought that he was like saying, well, that's a lead. You know, it's we know that's one of her brothers are at. Maybe he can provide us some clue. It's better than just riding the Seven Kingdoms until we've randomly bump into
it's
her.
It's a big place.
Which,
yeah.
If Pod only knew, that strategy was almost to pay off, you know?
Indeed. Yeah, you're probably right there. She would go up there and ask John about it.
I think it'd also be interesting to have like this black sister type aspect. You know, and we know the state of the Brotherhood. They're they were already slim numbers and they were decimated.
Yeah.
Recently, so they couldn't be turning people away on sexual assignment at birth, I don't think.
I don't know why there are no women in there. What are the rules? the Night's Watch.
I don't think they've ever explicitly stated that. Like,
okay.
Are women not condemned to death in Westeros? Because it seems like a man can always, no matter what,
yeah, I don't know.
Take the black, and that's exactly. That's a get out of death free card. I don't know if women
do people
just...
only do that, or are there people who decide I'm going to go join the Night's Watch?
No, oh sure. Like traditionally, a lot of second and third sons of like especially northern lords that
who
was,
are in line for nothing.
Yeah, it's like that's well, I can't really do anything but ride tourneys and bullshit. So I'm going to make my you know when the wall was still seen as kind of an honorable, prestigious post. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of that you could see echoing through Jon Snow and obviously his uncle took that path that we haven't seen since season one. But no, I would think that would be kind of a cool direction to take her with.
Yeah.
She could be the Lord Commander's hand. Like that would be an interesting position for
I imagine she'd be like the second best fighter, maybe the first best fighter. I don't know how good Jon Snow is necessarily. I don't know that I've ever seen him really get down too much.
I feel like
he went against the guy with the double knives.
Sure.
But he got his ass kicked.
Legend of Jyn Allyn.
He almost got killed. And if not,
no,
for the whore,
I think
Brienne
would kick his ass in.
Okay.
Kick his ass I think between so too. His ears. Totally.
He talks about, when you're fighting a wildling, you've got to disarm them
because
or whatever.
First of all, Jon would he'd be an asshole and he'd be pulling his punches against a girl.
Ah, of course. Yeah.
And before it's too late, his ass would chivalrous. Already be between his ears and it would be all over. I mean, because she's
ass between his ears. Wow.
Yeah, that's how hard it would be kicked.
Damn.
Plus, I mean, she just got. They both have Valyrian steel, so that equals out. And then she just has decisive size and reach advantages on him.
Certainly.
I mean, she. Granted, the Hound was ill, but she fought one of the best killers in the Seven Kingdoms. She won. She didn't fight him to a standstill. She just flat out won.
Yeah, kicked him off a cliff.
Sent him on his way.
All right. Littlefinger and Sansa head west, and they go to what Littlefinger calls a land so far from here, even Cersei Lannister can't get her hands on you. It's got to be across the sea, right?
We got some feedback on this. I know one person suggested, what if he's talking north of the wall?
Oh, my God.
Because that's the thing.
That's
like,
the last place.
Across the narrow sea is not exactly out of Cersei's grasp. King Robert was able to send an assassin to get Khaleesi.
True.
So, you know, if bitch needs to get got, it seems like that's not going to do it. So I don't know. I don't know where you could send them. I
think north of the wall would do it, but seems like a death wish.
It seems, you know, we talked about this last year, that Dorne is now, you could consider a hostile nation, since they didn't like the Lannisters too much, and now they've killed, guess, the second in line to the throne.
Yeah.
So that can't be good. Maybe he's got some kind of backdoor alliance that he could ship Sansa down there. I don't know if that'd be interesting. She could hang out with Myrcella.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I don't know. It's kind of thrilling. I don't know.
Sure. It's up in the air.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny, We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Cersei spies Margaery making time with the new king. Doesn't like it much. Lancel comes to see her, and he has apparently joined a religious group called the Sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants, I guess he wants Cersei to join here. I don't know. He's here for dubious reasons, in my opinion. Like, when he goes to talk to her, it seems to me that he is just there to lay out plot.
That's
mostly to lay out plot. You know, the Robert Baratheon stuff.
That's not an unreasonable interpretation.
But I don't like that. I don't want scenes to be about plot. The character needs a reason for being there, and I felt like it was a flimsy reason at best, which was to try to recruit Cersei for the Sparrows.
No, I don't think that.
That's the thing. Why go there to her
then? It's a family funeral,
mm-hmm.
and he went, and like, you know, religious fanatics do, they can't shut up about their god, so, in this case.
He goes to her once, he's shut down by, what, his dad or something?
That's his dad.
Okay.
Which we've met before. Kevin Lannister was one of Tywin's right-hand men.
Okay.
And we've seen him kind of be shut down by Tywin in council meetings like two seasons running, but he's not ever
How
been
is he
a major
related?
Character.
Like a cousin or
he's
something?
He's the brother of Tywin.
Oh, okay.
So he's the uncle of Cersei and Jaime.
Okay. But he shuts down the conversation there and is like, go away. The Sparrow shit is dumb.
Right.
But then he comes back to Cersei later on and just expounds on a whole bunch of plot stuff.
Well, I don't know. I think that, you know, if you have to introduce a new faction, doing it through a pre-existing character is not bad. And
sure.
And also it sets up the stakes of like, you know, it could someone like Cersei be redeemed? What would her redemption look like?
She'd have to cut off all her hair.
Yeah.
Get into some kind of tattered robe.
Sure.
And act like a monk.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she's got to do. Call herself a sparrow.
And get swole, because apparently some things the sparrows do is they worship at the Iron Church, because damn, Lancel.
Uh-huh.
Someone needs to fetch a chest plate stretcher for him, because he's not going to fit in his old one. He is... I don't know what they're feeding him down there, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
So we talked about this a little bit in the instant cast. About the stuff that he says in this scene, the stuff he insinuates and implies about Robert Baratheon, his death not being accidental, but being, you know, either planned or helped along by Lancel.
It was a scheme of some sort.
It was. And it was, even though she denies it, obviously perpetrated by Cersei herself.
Sure.
Why else does this guy come to her and tell her these things?
Sure.
And say it in such a cryptic, you know, I can't believe we did this sort of way.
Sure.
I can't imagine that the Sparrows are not going to heavily factor into this plot going forward. The plot for the throne. I can't imagine. Why introduce them this late in the game unless they're important?
I can only say two words that rhyme with biled Pinterest. Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. Then let's move on. Loras and his lover are getting down when Margaery comes in and tells him that the king is waiting on him. And she says he shouldn't be so conspicuous with his sexuality. He's like, yeah, whatever. What are they going to do to me? Mm-hmm. And Loras tells her that she's kind of trapped here with Cersei as her mother for the time being. And she says, perhaps, maybe that's the way it'll go. I think she has plans to get Cersei out of the way. If I were Lancel and I were talking about something, that's how I would say it.
Interestingly enough, I thought that this revealed that Loras was largely ignorant of all the machinations.
Yeah, I would say so.
Because he wouldn't be like, perhaps, what could you ever be talking about, sister, if he was privy to
the
like,
necklace stuff,
Lady Olenna and all that. Yeah.
I think they're keeping him in the dark.
I like the fact that it seems like the theme that the Tyrells are essentially a matriarchy.
Yeah.
A behind the scenes matriarchy, and they all just think the men are stupid. And Marjorie and says clear contempt for her brothers. Like, Jesus Christ, I get it. I get it. But do you have to be so brazen about it in the Capitol?
That's the thing. I don't think this guy understands.
No, he doesn't.
His position and the importance of that, and what kind of hell is going to come down on him when they find out about this stuff.
Sure. I mean, he's ambitious in his own way because he's the one that kind of pushed Renly into his own little rebellion. But he's okay. Also stupid to think that that guy could beat Stannis or the Lannisters straight up. So
yeah.
Which, I don't know, maybe that's only foolish in hindsight.
No, the women in this family definitely seem to be smarter.
Sure.
Than this guy, anyway. Tyrion continues to drink. We're back in Pentos, is that what you called it?
Yep.
Yeah. Varys convinces Tyrion that he needs to travel to Meereen to meet up with Daenerys to see, you know, if the world can be saved. Varys very much thinks that Daenerys is the only person for the job, and it makes sense with the stuff that they led on about with the group of people trying to reestablish Targaryen rule.
We also get a title shout out because men of Town have a part to play in the wars to come. He forgot the S, but you know, not everybody's perfect.
Well, his is one of the wars. There are many more.
Sure.
There's the war against the people of the North, the winter itself. I mean, there's plenty of wars.
That's the thing. Like everyone down south, or as Mance puts it, the Southron Kings, they're all concerned about the war for the Iron Throne. Yeah. They have no idea about, and they're largely ignorant and sometimes willfully so about the threat of the White Walkers. That's mm-hmm. just all a bunch of bullshit, foolhardy superstition to them.
Yeah, I can see why.
So there's at least two wars.
They're very far away from it.
Sure.
And it's been a very long time since it happened. So my thing here is Tyrion meeting up with Daenerys. I kind of love this.
Sure.
I kind of think she needs someone really smart.
I'll throw Varys into that.
Really connected. Yeah.
I've always liked Varys better than Littlefinger, mostly because Littlefinger just seems evil. And Varys, man, I don't know. I've always had a hard time pinning his exact motivations for why he does stuff. But he always, I mean, he talks a good game. It's always for the realm, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know which side you like. Are you a Tyrion pessimist that you think the world is just shit? And it's always going to be shit and always will be shit because that's the nature of the weak versus the strong. Uh-huh. Or do you feel like, you know, Varys, that we should have a chance of peace and prosperity and justice, that we've grown so used to horror, we just can't imagine another way, which, I, by the way, I'm pretty sure that's going to be someone's campaign motto for 2016.
Yes. Look at the horror. Let's try something else. Yeah, no, I like Varys' outlook much better than Tyrion's.
Sure.
Tyrion has his reasons for looking at the world this way. You know, part of which is being born a dwarf. That has certainly affected his life in big ways.
What do you think of his interest level of actually working for a power, his own power, and playing a key role in bringing about a just, merciful rule over Westeros?
He doesn't seem all that interested at the moment. He seems more interested in drinking himself to death on the road to Meereen.
I don't know. I thought that last comment where he said, "Can I drink myself to death on the road to Meereen?" showed that, like, it's kind of like I'm listening.
It is. He definitely is willing to at least go. I just don't feel like he's totally on board with the plan yet because he doesn't see the hope in it.
That. So it's like, I think it's going to be interesting. When, because in the books they are yet to have met, so we're rapidly advancing past that.
Wow,
I think it's going to be interesting what Tyrion makes of her when he finally gets there, and that's going to be largely shaped on, you know, Dany's kind of standing on a knife's edge whether she's going to continue being the largely benevolent force for good or fall off and become, you know, a dark queen kind of type character. And
all I want is Tyrion riding a dragon like Atreyu from Neverending Story. That's all I want. Just have him surf that dragon into King's Landing. I'm back, bitches.
Ghost riding the dragon. Okay, sure. Why not?
The other thing this scene does that I thought was kind of cool is it puts into perspective. You remember that scene? I think it was from last season where I think it's Jaime. No, somebody asks him what he wants. They're in the king's throne room. The king is not there. And Varys looks up at the throne and just kind of nods a slight bit. And we were like, well, Varys can't really be king. He's not nobility, I don't think. What does he have invested in capturing the throne? And now it seems like all the stuff with the Targaryens makes sense.
Mm-hmm. He's a Targaryen loyalist.
Yeah, like they had been planting those seeds for a long time. We just couldn't get the proper context on it.
One thing, because he seems like he's very pro Daenerys. Mm-hmm. However, if you think back to season one, he also was instrumental in carrying out the plot that would have killed her had it not been for Jorah's change of heart at the end.
Poisonous wine?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, it seems like the original plan was to put Viserys on the throne.
Until he got the golden helmet.
That's what I'm saying. I kind of question... I'm saying this because I kind of question his judge of character, because this is a guy who was going to put Viserys on... Who is it? A fucking idiot and an asshole and cruel.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason he wasn't Joffrey is because he didn't have the power, yeah, right?
Seemed like it.
But he, you know, he was Cersei's, or not Cersei, he's Daenerys's personal Joffrey. He was willing to advance that because, so it's like, I feel like that there's a little bit of a blind spot for him too. You know, it's like, I think he would have been inarguably worse than Robert Baratheon.
I think so too.
So it's like,
it seemed like Robert's biggest sin was just not caring enough about leading these people.
I think it's interesting that Varys's scheme looks a lot better on paper because Viserys got killed. Now, maybe that was the plan all along, that because there was something about like the way Illyrio handed them off to the Dothraki. It's kind of like, good luck dealing with the murderous horse people that are all about honor and respect, and you know nothing of those things. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he's extra smart that he knew that. But then why try to kill Dany?
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense.
Because it's not like they got together with Jorah and like wink, wink, pretend, but then save her at the last minute. Jorah did that because he fell in love with her.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of something that doesn't make sense to me with this plot. And it might just be...
I wonder if they're going to reveal something that will make it make sense.
It could be that Martin and the Double D's are just saying that the road to good intentions or the road to hell is paved to good intentions.
Okay.
And you know, like happy mistakes are just as important as great men doing things.
Yeah, could be.
But anyway, I thought that's kind of interesting for me.
All right, let's go to Hisdar. He comes to Daenerys and asks for the fighting pits to be reopened. She says, no, not going to happen. But later that night, a naked Daario makes the case for the fighting pits. He basically says he liked them because he got famous and he got set free and he met Daenerys. And he also says that she's perceived as weak because she has no dragons. A complete non sequitur at the end of that. Just goes from fighting pits, oh, by the way, you're not a queen because you don't have dragons.
I think it's a non sequitur is in the overall, I'm the one that tells you the truth because I see a naked and bone on the reg.
Yeah.
We haven't seen each other, presumably, because this background here is Hisdar and Daario went writing to Yunkai, or Runkai, as I like to pronounce it, to fix that whole Butcher King problem that they talked about last. And they set up another, you know, council that's like a mixed, you know, low class, upper class. And the only concession they're wanting is to reopen the fighting pit. So I felt like this was like, it felt like two lovers and confidants catching up after a couple weeks of being out of touch. So it's like, I tell you the truth. And another thing, your dragons are busted and this ain't going to work.
Okay.
So I got that. Now, I thought his message to her was less, well, the fighting pits aren't all bad, and more, you don't understand these people. It's kind of like the perils of being a foreign occupier, right? Like, let's say you conquer people that are, you know, objectively behind the times, or practicing human sacrifice or whatever. It's something you find personally abhorrent. And you go there and you say, all right, you savages, you're going to fucking stop doing all this shit by fiat. That seems like there's a way to it'll blow up in the face of even the people you're trying to save, like even the people that are being human sacrificed. Well, the gods are going to be pissed and our crops will die. And there's only so much you can do to drag a civilization kicking and screaming into a point where you want them to be.
I feel like he did not make the point well enough. I felt like this was a very...
He was trying to say...
This was just an anecdote about his life that...
But he's saying, you're looking at it from this black and white perspective. I am a shade of gray. Look at me.
He is. I just have to wonder about the people he's killed in those same fighting pits where he learned to... Where he prospered and became famous and met a queen.
And are all the people he's butchered as a second son, you know, they're...
What would those people say about the fighting pits, given the chance to answer?
Sure.
So I get what you're saying. It's definitely an example of maybe the way that the people in the pits think. But I think it's naive of him to just assume that his way of viewing it is also the way of everyone else.
Right.
When all those people were forced into it. It's not like they had any choice.
Well, and also, like, where do you... You can die a death by a thousand paper cuts for your ethics and morals. Like, Danny, it's like this old slave comes and, like, I can't work anymore because my master says I'm no longer a slave, but I can't earn money. And I...
Yeah.
So she's like, oh, fine, for fuck's sake. I'll make a ruling for this thing. And now they're wanting to open the fighting pitch. And she's like, absolutely not. And then Daria's like, but... At what point do you make accommodation for the locals, and at what point do you say, no, I cannot stomach this. This is a bridge too far. And she's so young and inexperienced.
This is why I like Tyrion getting there. Because who does she have by her side now?
Barristan Selmy?
Fucking, yeah.
Who's not nothing, but he's not a head of state.
He's not a smart guy.
He's a warrior.
Yeah, he's
a warrior.
A bruiser.
I mean, he's got the wisdom of seeing different kings and how they rule, and that's not nothing. But
no,
her advisors are essentially a bloodthirsty pit fighter.
And it seemed like Jorah was the only guy who was giving her advice that was really solid.
Then he's a slaver, which that's the other thing. It's like, you know, another thing is like, this is more complicated than you imagine at times. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
I feel like having Tyrion with... Honestly, I have always felt that Tyrion has, you know, that heart of gold sort of deal. He feels for the underdog because he himself is the underdog.
Right.
And I feel like he is, I'll stick to it, one of the smartest guys in Westeros. There are three of those three, he is one.
Okay.
Seeing him connect with someone who has leadership ability beyond what he can provide, who already has an army, who already has the loyalty of all these people because she set them free, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a combination to be reckoned with.
I think it's interesting about Dany is she's a lot of like early seasons Rick Grimes. Like, you want her to be this awesome leader, but she's got to learn and make some mistakes, and you're not going to always be happy with what she does, and where she ends up, who knows. But I think it's interesting that there's several heroes that we kind of think would do, like, you know, Tyrion should be the hand of the king always.
Yeah,
should be his for life. Like, Dany should get her shit together and go take over the Iron Throne. Or maybe Jon. Maybe Jon should, there'd be some horse shit way for him.
How would he even get a...
That's
army.
What I'm saying. But, like, you know, we're...
He could kill Stannis, take his army.
And then there's, like, the dark side with Arya, where it's like, yeah, I don't see her sitting Iron Throne, but I see her killing some dudes that need to be killed.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their part to play, and that's what's cool about the show.
Agreed. Daenerys goes to see her dragons.
Oh, by the way, that scene... Someone should get an Emmy for the cockhiding. Like, that sequence
Austin Powers-esque.
Of him pouring wine and a table placement and a pivot and just slow. way to go. Way to go. You saved this from a penis, Michael Slovis.
Masterful. Daenerys goes to see her dragons. They snap at her. They shoot fire in her face. Well, not actually in her face.
Right.
And then she runs out scared. Although, I argue that the mother of dragons would not be fazed by fire to the face.
How so?
She survived fire before. She burnt in that hut or whatever when she was back in season 2, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That thing burnt to the ground. She comes out completely naked with her fucking dragon eggs. Not a problem.
Yeah.
I think being the mother of dragons means fire doesn't hurt her.
That's a common theory amongst book readers.
That's just a theory? I feel like it was shown to
us. Well, here's the thing is muddying waters. Fuck it, I'm going to say it. Martin's come out and said that was like a one-time blood magic deal. That's not
blood magic.
Yeah.
If you'll excuse me, I forgot about the blood magic.
Yeah. So it's like, that's not been established or unestablished in the books, which is why it's a theory, but like the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, of course, the shows are different. And
what
they
am
made,
I to think? What am I to
think, Here's the thing, they
Walter.
Made a big deal about her being in scalding water and handling hot dragon eggs and all this other shit. So,
they
like,
did.
In the series, maybe she is fireproof. Does she know she's fireproof? That's the important question.
She's gotta.
And let me ask you this. Were the dragons actually attacking her, or were they all like...
If I woke up in the morning and my apartment had burnt to the ground around me, and I was completely unscathed, not a scorch, nothing, I would think I was fireproof. And I would test it. I would put my hand on a candle, and I would see what happened.
And then you just burst into flame.
Maybe so, but I would at least test it, and I would at least try to figure out if that was true. I got to assume that she knows that she is.
Okay.
Everything that's been shown to me says she's fireproof.
All right. I'm not arguing with you.
Okay.
Can I ask you whether you think the dragons were actually hostile to her, or they were excited to see her and she misinterpreted? Because you're right. They could have just straight up roasted her.
Yeah.
Now, it did snap in her face out of the dragon, which I got to say, this was a really tense scene because
It was.
Like, I didn't imagine they would kill her, but they filmed this like it's a monster, you know, this chain slowly rattling and all that. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But, you know, big dogs do that. They kind of nip, and especially if they're poorly trained, which these are, and neglected. I don't know that they hate her. I think they were just, they're confused. And
I'm with
they
you.
Were happy to see her, and now they're even more confused. And Dany just does not know what the hell she's doing.
I think you're right. She just got scared out of that situation because she misunderstood it.
Yeah, the art of dragon riding and dragon taming has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
There is no real living person with some exceptions I can maybe think of that has any kind of direct experience with how this shit should be done.
Tyrion apparently will figure it out.
Apparently the Targaryens didn't write that stuff down or broadly disseminate it outside their inner circles, because who gives the nuclear launch codes away to people, you know?
Here, how to train your dragon.
Yes. That all copies of those DVDs were burnt.
Yep.
By Balerion the Black Dread himself. They just piled them up, and there's the plastic throne. It's not nearly as impressive.
No, it's not. John tries to convince Mance to join Stannis, but he refuses, and I realize that is a simplification of this scene. But let's talk about it. What do you think Mance actually wants? Why does he turn John's offer down here?
So I've been thinking about this a lot, because this goes down differently in the books, in a whole bunch of ways. So it's like, I feel like I can, and it doesn't really, it's not germane to any kind of spoilers. So I've been thinking about this a lot. So you've got his personal pride and honor,
which he says is not a factor,
versus fighting for foreign wars, which is a big deal. Because the thing with that, it's like, yes, this sounds like a good deal. Mm-hmm. I go south of the wall, I help you kick these people's ass, and then we get set up. But where does it end?
And is he lying?
When the next time a threat to the Iron Throne, are we going to be called up to bleed again? And the next time, and the next time. Like, buying into your old bullshit. These people follow me because they all want to follow me, and they all believe in me. You go down there, we have to fight. Once we live by your rules, we have to fight whenever you guys say it is. Or that's whenever you guys say we have to.
That's the thing of being part of, you know, the kingdoms.
But on the other hand, with a near certain death, with winter coming on the wrong side of the wall and the White Walkers, you still kind of got to take that deal. So I'm wondering if he's seeing this as like, I can't make this sacrifice, or I can't kneel because it would destroy the alliance. But maybe if I'm martyred, someone else, like, you know, some big red bearded dude.
Oh, who should have died last season after being shot with 14 arrows.
Maybe somebody can pick up the pieces and lead, and, you know, they can be the one to kneel. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to sacrifice myself literally to give someone else a chance to, you know, because basically the pride of the free peoples has been kind of appeased. Like, I'm going to be their strong character, and then they can rally behind my memory with someone else who could kneel, because he can make the argument, we can all die one by one at his fucking stake, or we can roll the dice with this guy, in a way that if Mance tried to make that, it just seemed like he's being cowardly.
Okay, that's reading into it, I guess, more than I was going to. The way I saw it was that this is a man who has fought purely for the freedom of these people, of the free peoples, as you call them. I don't know that his plan was, I'm going to be martyred and hopefully someone better will, or someone who can rally these people to go do the thing I refuse to do, will take their place. I don't necessarily see that, but I get it. I felt like it was more about freedom. I really expected him burning alive to pull a Braveheart moment and just light the room up with freedom. He was going to. You could see it in his eyes.
I think he just got started screaming.
Shot. No, it was freedom.
Okay,
it was a welling freedom coming
freedom!
From him.
That's
what I thought.
Yeah.
Like, freedom is more important to him than the safety of his people.
But play that in your head.
And if he loses his freedom by getting his people south of the wall, he hasn't won them anything.
Yes, there's certainly part of that, but I also think that, like, play that in your head. If Mance says, all right, people, we're going to bend the knee. Mm-hmm. He's got a ton, like, it seems certain that a fraction, I don't know how large that fraction of the people would be like, this is bullshit, we're marching north and taking our chances with the White Walkers.
You're probably right, yeah.
Whereas by sacrificing himself and showing them the stark reality, pun not intended, that he's given them a chance to have peace with honor. I don't know. But it does...
Maybe.
Everything he says about this foreign war thing is right on, though. Because, yes, it seems like it makes sense this time, but we're also giving up every other chance of autonomy.
Yeah.
Because once he consolidates his powers on Iron Throne, if we decide, nah, we're done with you, he's just going to ride up here with his knights and his steel and put us to the sword. Because why not?
Sure, why not? So he's given one last chance to bend the knee before Stannis, but he refuses. And while he's being burned alive at the stake here, Jon puts an arrow through his heart. Boom. Done.
This was a great scene, man. Like, I just couldn't believe how horrific this was. Like, his reaction to it and the way his eye twitched when he said, you're going to be burned alive, not hung or
it's
whatever.
Not the way he wanted to go. I get it.
It's a bad way.
I gather.
And just how the eye contact between him and the Tormund was
what is this guy still doing alive, man?
Well, you need
he got shot with a lot of arrows, stuck in a nasty ass dungeon, and he made it through in fucking medieval times. I don't know about that.
Master Aemon doesn't fuck around. He's got the poultices and the dragon egg yolk and the semen virgin.
And maybe it was Melisandre. Maybe Melisandre came in and did some black voodoo on him. And,
yeah. Made a shadow band-aid.
Yeah.
Pull it right out of her twat.
He's going to be Tormund the Ghoul or whatever his name is.
I thought Mance was like really awesome about how much he showed respect for Stannis, but also like, I'm still burning. And John, John is just a black brother who is well liked by some percentage of the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
He just defied a king and the king's god. What do you think is going to happen here? What is the blowback? What's the repercussions?
You know, I don't think they're going to straight up kill John yet. Now, that's not to say it won't happen in the future. I killed Rob right at
the moment of triumph. It's a dangerous thing to say on Game of Thrones, period.
I know, but it's
confirmed
like,
Jon Snow dies next episode.
It doesn't feel like his plot has come to even close to an end. Although I would have said the same about Rob.
Yeah.
I just can't
or
see,
Ned.
You know, him being summarily executed next episode for his insolence.
But that's kind of a Martin thing. Just when you think you've got a hero on the verge of snatching victory from defeat, you get burnt at the stake or beheaded in the Great Sept of Baelor or stabbed at your wedding. So who knows?
True. I'm just guessing here.
Who knows?
The other thing... So there was one thing I did not like about this scene, and it is something that has bugged me about this character for a very long time. Why is Melisandre giving the rallying speech here for the troops?
She's giving the religious service part of it. It's like Stannis was the judge, and he delivered the sentence, and then she came in to do the religious stuff.
I don't like her being the motivating force for these troops. I really don't like it. The king should be doing that. Someone close to the king should be doing that. Not some witch doctor lady from who knows where.
Yeah, but Stannis is weird too because he's got some of his people are like fervent true believers. And
is nobody asking like who the fuck is this person?
I think those questions all got answered when she killed his maester. I mean, like...
No. I'm not talking to other people. The people she's speaking to.
Oh,
like all of the wildlings, oh, like the wildlings and like, yeah, that,
I guess. Like, well, but there's not
there. I'm looking at a king. He's right next to me. Why right. isn't he talking?
Right. To me, it did. I don't get it because it didn't seem weird to me at all.
I just don't.
It's
like
not
her.
Like the
I just
king
don't
just
like
stood
her.
There as an obvious figurehead. He offered the. I mean, it'd been weird to me if Melisandre had offered him the chance to kneel.
Totally
and
weird.
Stannis
yeah.
is just sitting there, but like him saying, like, "All right, well, you're going to burn now." For our master of burning ceremonies, give it up for Melisandre. I didn't bother
well,
me.
Didn't stick
bother
to what me. You know, I guess. Burning
Plus,
people alive.
Stannis doesn't like all this burning shit. This is his wife's deal.
But he's letting it happen.
Because he's
the fucking king, man. He should
I know,
be doing something
but,
about it if he doesn't like it.
But the shadow babies and the shadow leeches, man.
Exactly why I don't like this. Because that you can just wipe it all away by saying shadow babies.
And a lot no, I'm saying is like in that world, it's like this thing, this is real politic, man. I am supporting this because it is working for me. Even if I don't personally believe it. And also, a lot of my idiot followers believe it, so I kind of have to.
All right, fine. Stannis is...
the Manus.
He's doing a favor for all the people who believe Melisandre.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a little dog and pony shadow show.
All right, that's it. End of the episode.
Hey, this week we are lucky enough to be sponsored by Audible, and you can get a free trial of their service that I'm about to tell you about at audiblepodcast.com/GOT. /got, as in I got a free trial of Audible.
I think that stands for Game of Thrones.
Oh, well, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I thought that was like, man, that's really broad to be using for something for us.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they got 180,000 titles, works on their
That's
site.
Gone up since
it
last
is.
Time.
It keeps going up. I think it was like 100,000 when we started, like 150 last. It's going up by way faster than you can keep up with when reading, which
yes.
is a good thing. And you know, hopefully, by now, since I said it last week, that you can also get all of the unabridged works of George R. R. Martin, all the Game of Thrones, all that Song of Ice and Fire series, excuse me, in their entirety on Audible. And you know that using the WhisperSync technology, if you like reading on your Kindle and you also like listening to Audible, you can do both because the app will keep you synced up. But one of my favorite features, because like I was always slow to adopt audiobooks, because I prefer to read them because I can read so much faster.
Hmm.
But and sometimes the narrators read a little slow for my taste. What's really cool about Audible and their apps are that you can adjust the playback speed. And I find that like old Roy reads really, really, really to my taste at like a 1.5x. It's just perfect.
Okay.
Just perfect. He reads with alacrity, but it doesn't it's not hard to follow. And it also doesn't chipmunk them out. You know, you kind of expect them to, mm-hmm. but it somehow, I don't know whether it does it through clipping or whatever.
Just the tempo, no pitch change.
Tempo, no pitch change. Yeah. That seems
all about the
like,
tempo, no pitch.
Seems like shadow blood magic.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But it makes for a superior listening experience. And I can't recommend them enough. They got just a lot of great material. Their app is easy to use. And again, you can get a free trial. Good for any one audio titled in their collection. By going to audiblepodcast.com/GOT.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, let's get into some feedback, yeah? I think that's something we do now.
Yeah, we'll start with some old business before we get to the new. Devin from Denver has a theory about why people seem to be fairly even-keeled about some of these book deviations that we've seen and are coming down the pike. He says, I think this handling of the story is something that is interesting to look at from a perspective of how we consume media in our society and marks a turning point in how we view concepts such as canon. I think this willingness, even if a vast chunk of the reader audience is wary about it, to change and spoil book content is relatively a recent phenomenon. For example, I grew up as a child reading Harry Potter, and I remember being a very grumpy kid and as a moviegoer when they would make even the slightest of tweaks or deviation from the original story. I speculate that if everything with the Game of Thrones books and show was happening 5 or 10 years ago instead of today, it would have been an absolute disaster. However, and this might sound odd, I think we have the superhero and comic book movie movement in part to thank for this more accepted wiggle room for deviations. The superhero slash comic book culture has absolutely exploded in the last 7 years or so since Marvel kicked off their cinematic universe. And at their core, comic books are all about deviation and revision. You take the same characters and mix around their backstory, their situation, put them with a different group of people and see how they react and what they do. We're living in the reboot era of cinema. I think that's one of the reasons why the show is able to get away with making bigger and bigger changes. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm simply making an observation. And he also says that as far as whether or not this will end up being an off-season, as Aaron put it, I think that's up to the hive mind of the viewers. We may not notice, but the attitudes of fellow viewers influence our attitudes about the show. As an example, he says he used to enjoy The Watching Dead or The Walking Dead until he listened to our podcast.
Sorry.
And now he's put off of it. So he says people's attitudes.
I still enjoy it. It's still fun to watch. It's just not.
But it's one of those things where you can enjoy something and then someone peel the curtain back and suddenly, God, I see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
He says, so if book readers get too upset and that discontent steeps or rubs deeply into the Game of Thrones community as a whole, I can see this being an off season, not because of the content, which will likely be stellar, but because of the consumer hive mind being brought down a notch by angry book readers. So
I think he's mostly right.
I don't know, because his anecdotal experience from personal, like I've noticed that I've been more, as the older I get, the more I'm open to things being different. Like as a child, you just you don't understand the difference between a book and a movie adaptation. And you're more likely to be like, well, why couldn't we get Tom Bombadil and Lord of the Rings or whatever? Whereas you get older, you're like, well, because Tom Bombadil's fucking ridiculous. You're going to have a guy wearing gold hose and blue boots singing.
How is that any more ridiculous than
anything? Not stop it. Just stop it before you have a riot on your hands. But I do think that culturally, yeah. And the other thing you're missing in this analysis is the percentage of the population who's engaged in the source material versus the percentage that's engaged. You know, like, oh, I've got fond memories of Spider-Man and X-Men and Superman, and I want to see a movie about them. Like, these comics are selling like 100,000 issues if they're hits.
Yeah.
Millions of people worldwide are seeing these things. So it's much harder where back in the day where you were making some genre piece, you're really like, oh, God, I hope we really nail the interview in Fangoria and Starbase, whatever, Starlog. Or we're never going to get people to turn out for this shit. That's not true anymore.
Yeah.
So it's harder for like 5%, let's say that 1 million people have read Game of Thrones, or maybe it's 2 million. That's still like a third of the total audience. And if you factor in piracy and all, and the DVDs and Blu-rays, it's probably a tenth.
Yeah.
And we talked about in Walking Dead, like, you know, you've got people like hundreds of thousands versus millions. It's harder for that small group to be, you know, about these things.
To his point, it's harder for them to, affect the overall tone of the conversation, because there are just a few of them compared to the people watching the show alone. Yeah, I definitely do see communities and what they think of the material affecting what other people think of it.
It goes both ways,
but...
And it's certainly an amplifications device on the internet, because...
Definitely.
You don't have to care a lot about the source material, but if your best friend is like, oh, man, in this episode they did this, but in the book they did this, and that sounds cooler, then now you are infected with the thought that that's better. Whether maybe... If it is or not, that's a debate.
Also the legitimacy of blogs has kind of contributed to this. You know, I mean, some dude can get all butthurt about the show not matching the books, write a blog post that gets shared around the entire internet a million times.
And on Facebook.
And that's suddenly the prevailing feeling about the show, when it's really only a dude in his basement worried about that shit.
I mean, my thing is that I feel like... George Martin. So it's like, if you look at real history, like World War One, you could probably watch a 2-hour documentary and know everything you need to know about the principal players, how it started, the major battles, and the resolution, and maybe even how that influenced World War II. 2-hour documentary, PBS, boom, knocked it out. Or you could listen to 40 hours worth of Dan Carlin podcast and get all the nooks and crannies. Or you could read a 1,000-page in-depth history of the Serbian rebels versus the Austro-Hungarian Empire, right?
Sure.
The books of the Game of Thrones are more like the Dan Carlin Hardcore History podcast. Mm-hmm. The show is more of the 2-hour documentary. Like, we are stripping away. And it like I said, an instant cast, it's simpler. It's more straightforward. It's everything's more clear in the motivations, because people are just, you know, you get the benefit of hindsight windings down, where Martin's is more realistic and a political, like, you know, not everything that comes along is important through the plot. And there's a lot more red herrings. It's a lot more nuanced and complicated, which is better. I mean,
yeah, it's subjective.
Do you prefer the extended editions of Lord of the Rings or the theatrical? Do you like The Hobbit? 6-hour, if 9-hour bloat. I mean, it's kind of personal taste, right?
It is, definitely.
So, and I think that's where it is, where it's like, it's not, in the past, we got genuine perversions of the things we loved. Like a gritty take on Captain America, where he just kills people wantonly, and, you know, just stupid changes, or, you know, Super Mario Brothers movie. That's an abortion. This is not that. Like, it's not the wholesale strip mining of the things you loved and perverted. It's a simplified, streamlined version. It's harder to get mad about that.
Yeah,
I agree. People do. Hang out on the Game of Thrones subreddit. You'll find them. All right, moving on. Nick P says, I got my hands on the first 4 episodes this season. Wait a second.
Sounds spoilery.
That a friend of mine told me about. However, been struggling to figure out what I should do with them. On the one hand, I could finally get my Game of Thrones fix I've been waiting 10 months for, but on the other hand, I'll have to wait weeks before a new episode and have to avoid conversations with friends who don't watch the leaks. I know this isn't a traditional content-related question, but what do you think I, or anyone else with these episodes, should do?
Damn.
Speaking of personal opinion.
It's tough for me not to speak as a podcaster.
Well, that's a valid experience. I mean, that's a valid take on it
too. As a podcaster, I think you feel this way as well. It is a glorious opportunity to time shift some of the stuff that we do.
Yeah, because we're slaves to the internal wheel. Episode comes out, feedback is gathered, podcast is produced 48 hours or less after it comes out, and the circle is complete.
This is not an uncommon experience for reviewers, right? I mean, screeners are a thing that has existed for a very, very long time. You have to be a certain size. We don't get screeners. I guess you have to be important enough or a certain size, trustworthy enough to get those things, but
capable of being sued and actually get money out of.
But a lot of people are doing exactly that.
But the flip side of that.
So it's weird for us, because we're in a position where we could do that in a sort of screener method. I don't know if I want to watch them all as a lump, because that makes, you know, talking about feedback very difficult without, you know, having the same problem he does, spoiling it for people who haven't seen him.
And how, like, that's the other thing is, like, from a listener expectation, the expectation is that that we've set is that the hosts are going to experience this in conjunction, especially for the instant cast and this. And, you know, there's always a fear that somehow subconsciously you will have a different reaction when you're talking about a episode because you know, like right now we're talking about like, not sure. Well, if we knew for sure, that would change retroactively what we felt about the other material.
Certainly.
So that, you know, but that's us as podcasters. Like, how do you satisfy? How do you figure that stuff out? I mean, because
honestly,
thing is,
if I were just a viewer, I'd watch them all.
Right.
And then I would just wait a month to pick back up where
right. They
left off. Because I prefer to binge watch stuff.
And some That's people just how don't I do because it. you are like, are you the type of kid that your parent gives you candy bar and you slice it into 10 equal parts and you eat once a day and you prolong that enjoyment over an entire week or whatever? Or
I'm
are
not.
You the kid that gets the candy bar and just nom, 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 and yeah. It's gone?
No, I love
candy
bars.
Is one right? Is one wrong? I can't say.
No.
I mean, ethically, if you're an HBO subscriber or if you cannot legally get the episode in day and daytime with the rest of the world, I think ethically you're fine doing whatever. Like, how am I stealing from HBO if I download these four episodes? You and I both are HBO subscribers.
Yeah.
We paid for this content.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have commercials. It's not like their advertisers are getting ripped off or anything.
And if you, for whatever reason, can't afford or decide not to, you're going to do whatever the hell you're going to do anyway. So, like,
here's the question you got to ask yourself. Do you think that you want to have conversations with your friends about these? And if so, will you be able to keep your mouth shut when it comes to spoilers or even delineate spoilers from non-spoilers during these conversations?
The hammer to me is this. We are living in a post-spoilers society. If you do not...
You are.
If you do... No, I'm saying... Here, listen to my point. If you do not watch these episodes and you are part of the online discourse, if you're hanging out in the forums, like hanging out on the wikis, you're hanging out on the subreddits, I'm almost guaranteeing you will be spoiled.
Yeah.
Because this information's out there. It's Pandora's box. So if that's important to you, then I would say binge the hell out of them, because the pain of getting a third episode spoiled this week is probably going to outweigh the pang of regret that waiting the world to wait a month for it to be caught up.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
So that's the thing. It's like, that is a real thing. If you're a spoiler phobe, which I'm not, but if you are, that's a real concern. And I would watch the hell out of them, because I can't see how, unless you just get off of Twitter, get off of Facebook, get off the forums, get off the subreddits.
You kind of have to do that anyway, though, because there are books, right? I mean, for a large part of it, people on the internet are spoiling shit anyway.
Yeah, but there again, if you're you can avoid that by staying out of the subreddits that discuss. Like, most sites are kind of geared towards not spoiling you if you're just a show watcher.
Yeah.
Like, there's separate wikis, there's separate forums. When you got to something like this, we're just out there. I feel like it's a bigger risk.
Okay.
So anyway, moving on. Corey P says, I've been listening to podcasts, but I've never emailed in. Want to get your thoughts on what you think will happen with the Dany Super Friends team. It seems that Varys and Tyrion will be joining with her. I also think that that this is where Littlefinger and Sansa are headed, with Littlefinger saying they're going out of reach. Side note, this will create an interesting romantic decision for Sansa between Tyrion and Littlefinger. A horrific romantic decision.
Yeah,
like, I don't think
neither of those choices are good, A.
For her, sure.
But
I love Tyrion, but he's the son of the people who murdered her father.
And she never liked him anyway.
Well, largely for that reason. Plus,
she was forced to be with him. I get why she didn't like him, but she doesn't like him.
the funny irony is that she loves Loras because he is the shining, beautiful knight of her fairy tales.
Yeah.
But he's a shallow kind of shit. Uh-huh. And he's gay to boot. So that's barking up the literally long tree. Whereas Tyrion is lots of very positive qualities, but he's also Lannister.
Sure.
And Littlefinger is a fucking creep. No.
Yeah,
Littlefinger
does
not get Sansa, goddammit.
Well, I can't
you hear
say
me,
that.
Martin?
I can't say that for sure.
You hear me, Dan? And
Littlefinger tends to get what he wants. So, I don't know. If
Dan
he wants
and Dave,
Sansa.
I don't know. That would be a finger too far for me. Who else do you think is going back to her? Will Jorah make a return? Bran? Mm. I look forward to hopefully hearing what you think.
I think Jorah's coming back, yeah. I don't think he's done. you know, he got dismissed in shame, but I think he'll be back.
What about Bran?
The kid in the tree?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got to come back.
Do you think he's going to come back on the Westeros side of things or the Essos side of things?
Dude, he's on the tree side at this point. He's on the old man in the tree side. I don't fucking know where he's going.
Yeah.
He's so far north, he's stuck in this tiny little ray of sunshine way up in the winter. I don't know.
I just question whether if they go over to Dany, if they're truly out of reach of Cersei. Although, the one thing is, in Meereen, I don't think Westerosi could assassinate Dany at this point. She's too well protected by fanatically loyal people. So if she could get into that circle.
Yeah, if they were going to try it, Tywin probably would have. Instead of like sending this note about Jorah, he probably would have just sent an assassin.
I also think, I wonder what Dany's going to think with her suspicions being flamed by, the Jorah situation, what she'll think about the Hand of the King and the people responsible, and for some of the scheming against her coming to her with open hand. Like, a lot of people think this is a slam dunk. Like, oh, of course she'll welcome that, but man.
There's a lot of reasons not to.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of reasons not to.
Yeah.
Janine the Dragonwalker said, this is what I wanted from a season opener. I'm frankly tired of people who expect jaw-dropping drama in every episode. Although they did spoil us last season.
Sure.
Every other episode was a damn finale. But she finds that constant drama gets tiring to watch. Sometimes you need to ease into things and have the storylines, or with the storylines changing from the books, though not always such a radical change as we may think, we may need some time to absorb and to process. Plus, we need an episode to just catch up and refocus. And I thought this one did that nicely. Did you guys notice how much Sophie Turner's voice has deepened over the last year? She sounds quite grown up now versus last year, and it was a little weird for me not having a visual. I didn't
notice that.
Well, plus, I believe Janine is one as our fan is blind. So she's going.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Also, I wonder if you were watching the pirated copies, because I heard across the board that there was an audio effect to whatever encoding process, and they're kind of shitty quality. That's the other thing.
Huh.
I've heard anecdotally, because I haven't seen them myself, that some of the voices were pitched lower, or the sound was kind of pitched lower in general. So I don't know if you saw it legit or you saw it time shifted. And I'm not judging either way, but that's a possibility, because I didn't notice. She goes, also nerdy technicality here. If Littlefinger and Sansa are going west, isn't the high road through the mountains where the hill tribes and all that are from? It seems more than a couple days from King's Road. Of course, we don't know just how long they've been in that carriage before those lines were spoken. So maybe. So the concern there is the hill tribes are where Catelyn Stark and Tyrion went through, where Tyrion first met Bronn. They got jumped by all those kind of savage hill folk.
Yeah. Which way did they say they were going? They said they were going west, but they're actually going east.
No, they said they're going east, but they're actually going west.
Really?
So east. So you know, you got the mountain, and you know where the Eyrie is kind of like in the middle of the Vale, and east would be out towards the coast where the Fingers are, and west would be. But also, we don't.
If that's true, then I doubt they're headed towards.
But we don't know how far away they are from the Eyrie at this point. Like, I don't know if geography. I don't know if they're riding through. I feel like Peter would know about the hill folk or the hill tribes rather, and he would know to avoid them. And he's armed sufficiently to not be afraid of them in any way. So I don't think that's going to be a concern moving forward. She also speculates that Littlefinger is taking Sansa beyond the Wall because where else could he take her that Cersei can't reach her? Seems like a valid point. Who steps into leadership of the Wildlings? She thinks Tormund, of course. He may not be a kneeler either, but he will come to some sort of agreement with Stannis and Jon Snow.
Yeah, he definitely seems like the most likely person. Let's put it this way. He's the only person that the audience could reasonably see doing that.
Good point.
Who else do we know in the Wildlings at this point, right?
The other thing is, We think of this from the Wildlings' perspective of like, you know, I guess Stannis could just burn and execute us all. But if we step back, can he really? We know he needs this army.
Yeah.
So will Stannis eventually flex a little bit rather than just continually execute or write off this army?
Maybe.
It's not like he holds all of the power. I think it seems that way. But if you, like I said, if you take a step back, it seems like there's a little wiggle room there. Jonathan A. from Cali says, who do you think would fight in a, or who do you think would win in a fight to the death? Robin Aaron or Samwell Tarly? Season one Sam versus season five. He's also debate season one Sam versus season five Sam.
No, it's Sam any season. It's Sam any, just his size alone. I don't know how Robin gets any damage done.
Well, I mean, the Sam in the season one just wouldn't defend himself. At least Robin is trying to block the blows. Like, on the other hand, if Sam just trips and falls on Robin, it's
exactly,
all over.
Yeah.
So
I think I've got Sam in
I think season
any
five
season.
Sam, it's a runaway.
Oh, yeah.
It's a runaway, especially if Gilly's watching. Inver M has a question about Cousin Lancel. Is his newfound religious affiliation the same as Melisandre's, i.e. the Lord of the Light, or is it another cult? I'm going to see if you can answer this one, Jim.
I have no idea.
Really?
God no idea. I'll tell you what, I don't understand. Like, I don't know who's working for the Seven Gods or the Lord of the Light, or yeah. Like, I don't know anything about the religion or magic of this universe. And I honestly don't care to.
All right. Well, they've laid it all out for us. Lancel is follows the faith of the Seven. So this is the majority okay. religion for Westeros.
So the sparrows are
they're like so. I think
are following the Seven.
Think of the
gods.
High Septon, who's kind of the douche that met Cersei at the beginning of the episode and saying all these lords and ladies are waiting to see your dead dad. And
yeah,
so he's kind of like the old Pope Palpatine. Likes the rich stuff, you know, a little bit more sterner, less compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
And the sparrows are the new pope. He's okay. a little bit more simple, a little bit more down to earth, more of the people, concerned with the plight of the poor and unprivileged. It's the same faith, you get it? It's just a different emphasis. One caters to
they
the rich
serve
and
the
powerful.
Same
yeah, yeah, yeah. Just yeah, like yeah. the two popes.
Sure.
That was the point
the,
I was trying to
the
make.
Many branches of Christianity. And
sure.
In
well,
world.
Even I mean, these are the exact. These are like they're all Roman Catholics. It's just, you know, which are you?
They have slightly different philosophies.
Are you primarily like, concerned with serving the rich and getting favors and making like, maybe bending the rules, like setting aside marriages where they need to be set? Or are you more strict? Like, nope, this is what the Seven says.
Yeah.
This is what the father and mother, the crone, the maiden, the smith, the warrior, and the stranger. God damn, I think I got them all. This is what they're saying, and there's no this is absolutes, or do you cater to the rich and powerful?
Okay. And then there's some other god that
yeah, there's
the
Rhaenor,
heretics
who's
worship.
The Lord of Light, and that comes from off of Westeros. And uh-huh. then you've got the Northern that still worship
the old gods.
The old gods or the yeah. tree gods.
Ned's gods.
And that's the thing, like it seems that the old gods have a bit of a juice in their tank. Like you can warg into things and you can kind of see the future and you apparently can throw fireballs and shit. And the Lord of the Light has some juice in his tank. He can resurrect people from the dead. He can pop shadows out of twats. He can do a lot of things. Faith of the Seven seems very toothless. They don't do shit.
All right.
So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't.
All right. Mike K said, I'm curious about your thoughts on this. Assume the following. Stannis claims that Joffrey, Tommen, and Marcella are all bastards, therefore have no claim to the throne. A bastard is defined as a child out of wedlock. Marriage is determined based on religion, and the Iron Throne seems to adhere to Westerosi religions, the old and new gods. At least it seems that way from the ceremony where Joffrey and Tommen were each crowned. How does Stannis even have a claim if he doesn't believe in the religion that would define these kids as bastards in the first place? I think that I think that all the religions see a bastard as a bastard. They're a less legitimate in the eyes of like claims to the throne. Like even Dorne, that seemed to be fairly non-judgmental when it comes to bastards and just loose morals. Yeah. Still, like I don't think you're going to see the lines of heredity going through bastard children.
Hmm.
Like,
so
Alaria
soft
Sand
on bastards.
Is not going to be the queen. None of Oberyn's bastard sisters are going to sit in the Sunspear or whatever their capital is.
Yeah.
So it's I feel like that's kind of like a universal thing.
Uh-huh.
It's legitimate versus illegitimate, not not a matter of spirituality, sacredness.
Okay.
Bob in Illinois says, hey guys, did you notice Charles Dance is given a prime credit in the opening sequence? What's up with that? Mm-hmm. Is it just for this one scene as a dead guy, or is he going to be in more of the season? I don't think he got such a prime credit spot in the previous seasons when he was a big player. Will there be a lot of flashbacks this season? I kind of like the opening scene with the young... Oh, well, that's a non sequitur. Let's talk about that. Charles Dance and the screen credit.
No, I think he was saying kind of like the flashback with Cersei.
Ah. I don't think we're going to see any flashbacks, although I guess it wouldn't shock me. But I saw some people speculate on like professional blogs like Seppenwall, and some of those guys were thinking that it's kind of a pain in the ass for an actor to come back for just one death scene or just lying there dead. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was to show appreciation for a man of his talents to come and do that, just kind of favor for them.
Could
so be. He gets a prime could spot, be. Just like not like he, not like Charles Dance would like fucking prima donna or anything.
Yeah, it was something he didn't request.
It's a respect, like really, yeah. Thanks for helping us out here.
Maybe so.
A latex dummy just wouldn't have done the same thing. Judd B says, it's just me. Does it seem like Double D's have their don't give a fuck switch turned on in regards to makeup? Aaron's criticism of the tapioca puddinged three-eyed raven is well known, as well as the mountain not being aged up to look older than his younger brother, the hound, mm-hmm. when all would have taken is a little bit of salt and peppering of his beard and his hair with some gray. I bring this up because I did not buy the witch in the tent in Cersei's flashback scene at all. Was she rough around the edges? Sure. Would a child find her intimidating or frightening? Sure. But add a few layers of clothing and tone down the eyeliner and she'd fit right in at Craster's Keep or any of the low-rent brothels we've seen. Mm-hmm. To their credit, the Double D's have always known when to omit flamboyant features, such as in the book, Dario Nyquilus has purple hair and a forked beard. But for fantasy series featuring dragons, giants, ice demons, it seems like they should not be afraid to swing for the fences on notable characters and should certainly be aware of the smaller details when it comes to aging characters up. This is weird. Why don't they seem like they care about details like that when they sweat so many others?
I don't know. And it would seem to only add to the effect in this scene, right?
And it's not like I need this guy to look like the mountain. It's I need this guy to look like he's older than the hound.
Yeah.
That is a thing.
And you want this witch to look kind of scary. Although, I mean, I don't know. Cersei goes in and she says, you're just boring. You don't seem all that scary. Sure. So, I mean, they're definitely pointing it out.
Yeah, but it
felt like a conscious choice in that scene to me.
What's weird to me, it's like there's some rule that no one on Game of Thrones can be ugly. Even characters that are very ugly in the books, like Tyrion and Brienne, are objectively handsome people. Like, I'm struggling to think of a single person who is just ugly. Can you think of one?
Like, just really horribly ugly?
Yeah, like, even Davos. Like, the guys are like people nothing. Who aren't... They're just like, they're perfectly serviceable-looking, distinguished gentlemen, or, you know.
I mean, there isn't anybody I would call ugly. There are a lot of people I would call very ordinary looking. It's not like everybody is a model.
I mean, every once in a while you'll get an old Nan or you'll get a rough looking Craster's Keep. But then again, you know, it does seem like everyone's above average beautiful in this show. And maybe that's just a quirk with them. Huh. And they got 8 million people watching, so they ain't wrong. Moving on, Sleef says, I had to write in and say I will have to write on and say I will officially become a Club Bald Moose subscriber if you guys do a YouTube reenactment of Jon Snow Melisandre Are You a Virgin scene.
Oh my
Aaron God. Is Jon Snow and Jim is Melisandre.
I'm more of the Jon Snow type, but I don't know.
Well, I'm more of the Melisandre?
No, you're not. The problem is neither one of us
I
are.
Don't get cold.
You don't.
It's not because I got the Lord of the Light inside me.
There you go, to strap a red wig to your head and you're Melisandre. No, I got I'm building the Jon Snow hair here.
Yeah, so he's got to work on.
Maybe in another year I can get there. And
plus, your dialogue is essentially no, no. So I don't know. Sure. Don't know if we can do that. He says, all in all, it's a good episode to kick off the season. As you said in Instant Cast, a lot of setup. Religious fanaticism definitely agrees with Lancel Lannister. Damn boy, glad they brought him back as well as Kevin. I literally laughed out loud at Dany when she went to visit her dragons. She just strolls in and thinks she can be all like, hey, kids, I'm back. How are you? Come hang out. And they're all like, what the fuck, Mom? You chained us up in the fucking basement. I mean, it worked for Britney Spears. Why wouldn't it work for another blonde girl? However,
did it work for her?
She's on the cover of People, and she seems happy with her kids.
Oh, she seems happy? I'm not sure about that.
However, Miss Sandy and Grey Worm, seriously, this quote-unquote love story, whatever the hell it is, needs to go. So boring and pointless since they're not going to bang, and I'm pretty sure one of them's going to die. I just don't care.
They need to be making some other point with that. Yeah. I can't imagine a love story between them being interesting with Mr. No Dick and Miss Sandy, who I don't know where she fits into this whole thing. She seems to be relegated now just to that storyline.
Yeah. With White Rat and his whole deal with the
White Rat.
That's the guy, the name the insulted guy's throat slit while he was getting some boob snuggles in.
How would I know that?
Because they said it.
They did?
Anyway.
So color animal, that's the nomenclature for these people?
You just cracked the code. You just cracked the unsolid.
Seriously?
Code. Yeah.
And the green badger?
In the books, that was a further control mechanism that literally every day...
Take away their name.
And every day they pick a new name out of the hat.
Oh.
Like they'd go...
How did the leaders keep that straight?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't think it mattered. The leaders wore a special hat. Like, instead of one spike, had three spike, and everybody else was a follower, so... Hmm. You knew the, but it was kind of like reinforced that you are not important. You don't even get a name that you get to keep.
Okay.
So they threw away that in the book, the show, but no, regardless, like I thought they were going to give that a little bit more poignancy, but now if they go that route, it just feels reductive. So I'm kind of fucked this plot line too. But
yeah,
hopefully they'll redeem it.
We'll see.
Hugo H said the connection may be a little weak, but I'd like to hear your take on comparison between Littlefinger and Frank Underwood. Both men come from nothing, rose to power behind the scenes, use prostitutes to gain information, etc.
Both have very false accents.
I think they would do both. I think they would do very well in each other's position.
Probably. They are of a kind.
I think Littlefinger throws Claire off of Air Force One. this season.
Through the moon door.
Through the moon door. The emergency hatch of Air Force One.
Yep.
And I think Frank really enjoys whoever Lancel's playmate is. Oliver?
He eats all the ribs in the room.
he just be constant boar hunts with him.
Yes.
And they would slow bleed those boars.
Uh-huh.
Lord JM of House Baxter says in response to preview cast, part of me as a book reader hopes that after the show ends and George Martin finishes A Dream of Spring, the ending is different, just to troll everyone. Put Danny on the Iron Throne in one version and Pod on the Iron Throne in the other. I don't know.
Podrick on the Iron Throne.
I hate it when creators and the word troll come together, like, you know, the Kirkman thing. I feel like I want the creators to have more respect for the people that made them rich and famous, but that's just me. And George does seem like he's a stand-up dude. He seems like he feels the weight of this expectation on him, which might be a bad thing. I don't know. Am I the only one frustrated by Dany's complete fear of dragons? It completely demonstrates why she's not fit to conquer or lead at all. She calls herself the Mother of Dragons as one of her many titles, but cowers in fear and runs off whenever one of her kids give her attitude.
Yeah, I'm not frustrated by that. I think it's good characterization.
Whenever she decides to stand up and give him the mother's look of death, she may be able to control them.
Yeah, and we're waiting for that time. I think they've been doing a good job with Dany.
Yes.
And her, not necessarily rise to power, but her rise to who she's going to be. You know?
And she, I mean, Dany's not ready. She's not ready for any of this. Mm-hmm. Will she be ready? Who knows? But I'm having fun watching it.
Yeah, me too.
I know a lot of people are getting testy about the whole, like, God damn, I thought she would be riding to Westeros on Dragons two seasons ago.
I suppose if you're getting impatient, I could see why.
Yeah, but I feel like if you made it through last season, then you're maybe ready to settle in and see how it goes.
Tyrion's the key.
Dan from Manchester says... It took a whole 16 minutes to get a glimpse of a topless woman and a major act of violence. How dare they waste valuable screen time with well-written dialogue, deep characterization, and wire-esque political plotting. We do get a brief side boob from Daenerys, but then we get more of her naked partner. We also get a long homosexual love scene. How dare they be so fair with gender politics and not just aim everything at heterosexual males? This show has lost touch with what's important and, more importantly, what its key fan base wants on the screen.
Hmm.
That's all heavily sarcasm tagged.
Obviously.
He said, by the way, an extremely attractive woman asked me if I was a virgin and then answered with a good after I told her that I wasn't. I can safely say I'd have my clothes off faster than Superman on cocaine. Jon Snow is certainly no Don Draper. I made that same point in Instant Cast.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Mm-hmm. That's what you do. It's like
that elevator takes a while to get up that wall.
It's like, are we doing this now, m'lady? I have a burning stake of my own I'd like to show you.
Jesus.
We're gonna stop it there.
Matt
S says, I know the obvious thought is the prophecy is Marjorie, but can't it be Dany? Let's do a roundup on who the queen more younger and beautifuler, that's not a word, but whatever, than Cersei could be. Marge,
I think,
for
it's
sure.
Marge. Yeah. I mean certainly Cersei views it as Marjorie. She has no idea that Dany is a threat.
But Dany fits that profile.
Yeah.
Sansa is a princess as well, since Rob declared himself King of the North.
Mm-hmm.
What about Arya?
Nah.
No?
I don't really even see her wanting the throne, frankly.
Sure. But maybe she's the type of person that needs to sit on it then.
Maybe.
Like, anyone who wants an Iron Throne, I kind of want to self-select you as not being on the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
Because you're probably going to be terrible.
Sure.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone else, any young, beautiful people.
Bran.
She younger than Sir? Yeah, probably, yeah.
Probably a little bit, yeah.
Okay. She's not a princess, though.
She's not.
She's not queen material.
Mm-hmm. Melisandre. I don't know that she's younger. I think she's about the same age.
Yeah. About the same age. And also not a queen. She's a former whore, if I recall her backstory correctly.
I don't know that that matters when you can do magic.
True. She can have a shadow crown pop out.
Yes.
And there you go. Queen Melisandre the First. Troy C. What if Melisandre asked Jon if he was a virgin because she knows something about Jon's mother that we, the audience, do not? Melisandre plans on... What if she plans on using Jon's royal biology in the same or similar way that Stannis and her created the ghost vagina demon?
Mm-hmm.
Stannis has only done that once. Maybe Melisandre can only do it once per royal or kingly man. So if you'll recall, Stannis came to her after he got his ass whooped on the Blackwater and said, make me another one of them shadow babies, woman. And she says, nope, you're not strong enough. I used up too much of you. She was able to make four leeches out of... There does seem to be a limit to how much you can do of use of someone's blood and his blood magic before it kills them. You know, you can say the
but
same
then
thing
can't
about
you
how
just
Dany,
use blood magic to bring them back or something.
Because I feel like that there, like, as much as you make fun of it, I do feel like there is a law of conservation in effect here that, like, it takes a Khal Drogo and a witch and a unborn child to bring three dragons back to life, you know?
Okay,
there's like the law of equivalent exchange if you're a Full Metal Alchemist fan is in effect here.
That's one of Newton's laws, I'm pretty sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jon Snow, we don't know who his mother is. It's one of the mysteries.
Mm.
One of the mysteries they set up in almost the first episode of the show. Do you think there's some royal connection there? I mean, arguably, Ned's blood was royal.
That's what I was thinking.
He descends from the kings of the North. I mean, less than 300 years ago, they were kings.
Yeah, so I don't know that he needs his mother to be some kind of royal.
But if she was, that would be pretty boss.
Yeah, why not?
All right, that's all we got. That was quite a lot, but that's all we got for this week. You can send us more feedback at gameofthrones@baldmove.com. Also, you might be wondering, where the hell is the spoiler section? We are going to be releasing that later this week.
Friday. If I'm correct.
Friday. Yeah. I think if I could figure out a way to do it, Club Bald Move members would get a bonus or early peek at this.
Oh.
I'm trying to do these video stuff, but it's a struggle between finishing off Justified and my struggles with Adobe Premiere at this point. So those might come later in the season or be more sporadic than I'd hoped. But yes, I'm going to be recording that Thursday, and it'll be release Friday around noon. But that'll give me a lot more time because, damn, we got a lot of spoiler feedback, which I'm loving, a lot of great tinfoil suggestions. So this is going to give me a lot more time to work on that.
Cool.
So that's Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. Of course, you can participate on forums. What's cool about forums.baldmove.com is I keep two threads, spoiler and non-spoiler. So the book readers can have fun and the show watchers can have fun and not intermix and spoil each other. So that's awesome. You can also get a release schedule or keep up with the releases on facebook.com/baldmove and on Twitter @baldmove. Now I'm done.
All right, cool.
Get us out of here.
We'll be back right after next week's episode for the Instant Cast. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.